Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Thistle Rugby Podcast, the only rugby podcast that cares about Scottish rugby. How are you guys doing? I am joined here, as always, by Matt.
Hi guys, how are you doing? What a day to be talking about Scottish rugby.
And as always, our lovable grouch, Alan.
It's not that good a day to be talking about Scottish rugby.
Alan is just in a bad mood, but it is a great episode we've got for you guys. We have just off the line with a brilliant chat with Scotland centre Joe Ansbrough. Amazing insight into his career and a brilliant story about living with Chris Ashton when he was down at Northampton. But welcome back. You're either listening to us on iTunes or the Acast podcast app. And you've been chatting to us a lot on Twitter this week at Thistle Rugby Pods. And if you're on iTunes, we've had a couple of great reviews this week, but probably the best one is actually a review which has been updated by our good friend DM1971. So you may remember a couple of weeks ago he slagged Alan off for having a really nasal voice. He said that we had old opinions and we stole them from other podcasts, which is only partly true. But he's updated it this week to say much better this week. Really good opinions. Also, a podcast without Alan would be like Queen without Freddie Mercury or AC/DC without Brian Johnson. I skipped to the station. The only downer was the suspicion that I might have been Stephen Jones. So there we go. We are changing opinions as we go. We had a couple other great reactions to our episode with Nick Mullins last week. So thanks, guys. We really appreciate that. If you are enjoying what we're doing, get onto iTunes, subscribe, leave us a review, and just let us know what you think. Again, on Twitter, at Thistle Rugby Pod. So, again, as I say, great episode. We just had a really good chat with Joe Ansbrough, but we're going to be getting into that in a minute. But first up, we are going to have a look at some news, transfer news, and some sad retirement news from a couple of Scottish legends, and a look back at what was a pretty dismal weekend for the pro sides. But why don't we start off with breaking transfer news this morning, and that is Edinburgh's Manu is off to Treviso, which seems like, I don't know, is that a sideways move or a step down? Matt, what do you think?
I think in regular seasons it would be a step down, but this season it's pretty much a sideways. No, it seems as if they haven't been clear whether he's been released or sort of bought out of his contract. My suspicion is that he has been released. It's a shame because he came to the club with high expectations. He's had sort of really injury-ridden 2 years, barely played any matches. So maybe they've just decided, you know what, back row is a position of strength. let's just move him on, which is a shame. But, you know, I think when he played, he gave his all, but he just probably hasn't done enough to justify what I'm sure is quite a big wage.
No, definitely. He probably just got a bit too comfortable at Edinburgh, I would think. Probably just a few too many long lunches in Stockbridge. But no, sure, Treviso will hopefully sort him out. I mean, to be honest, he was captain of a Super Rugby winning team. And he's not an old guy. He's not like a 35-year-old guy looking for a final contract. He's 28 and, you know, he's only had sort of 12 caps over sort of the course of the 2 years. So it's quite annoying. I think a lot of people had quite high hopes for what he could do for Edinburgh. But no, hopefully he'll go on to do some quite good things.
Yeah, quite a nice metaphor for Edinburgh Rugby there, taking a super rugby winning captain and spitting him out 2 years later with 12 caps and sending him to Treviso. So there you go. Another somebody leaving, Grayson Hart, who's I think had 3 or 4 caps for Scotland over the years, is off down to playing the is it the championship or it will be the championship for Ealing Trailfinders. What do you reckon to that, Matt?
Yeah, well, I think like a few years ago, moving to Ealing, they were sort of bottom dwellers and actually yo-yoing between National One and the Championship. But they're third, I think, this year. They just put, I think, 70 or so points on London Scholarship at the weekend. So there's a chance that they might get promoted. Although I think this is the last year they're doing playoffs in the Championship. He's been between Glasgow and Edinburgh for a few seasons now and hardly played any games. So I suppose the writing was on the wall. Always did fairly well when he played, and he's been playing with the sevens at the moment, and from what I've seen, doing quite well. So I think he's been a pretty good servant, but it's probably quite a good move for him as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned London Scottish there. London Scottish announced this week that they've got a brand new chairman, a chap called Malcolm Offord, financier from Edinburgh, and he gave quite an interesting interview to the Scotsman where he talked about really focusing on taking the club back to its quite social sort of semi-pro roots, which was quite interesting based on what the SRU have done over the last few years of pumping in money and players and giving the sort of consultancy of Sean Lennon for a little bit. Did you guys make anything much of that announcement?
I do see the logic behind it, but it's hard in that championship league. You know, like when you've got teams like London Irish, Jersey, to a point Ealing and Bristol who are coming down next season, who are all full professional teams, trying to sort of run this sort of semi-professional sort of social team in the championship, it just sounds like you're going to end up ending up with a few sort of hammerings and you're going to sort of struggle to keep the players you need to really sort of succeed at a level. But, you know, it is, we've been down a couple of times and it's such a good sort of setup down there, so a great location. And, you know, I hope that it all turns out pretty well for them.
Yes, yeah, so do I. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes to pass over the next few months. Some big sort of retirement news. A couple of Scotland and Glasgow Warriors legends. Firstly, Kelly Brown, former Scotland captain, has retired. He's going to be leading the academy side at Saracens, and one that's much closer to all of our hearts, particularly Alan. Big Sean Lamont hanging up his boots and his orange gloves.
Yeah, I really hope Sean does sort of another naked calendar, sort of a final. Oh, God.
Dude. Interesting insight there, isn't it?
Oh, jeez. Yeah, final farewell to the Warriors fans. No, I saw there was a poll that everyone's trying to get him to bleach his hair and get those beautiful fluorescent orange fingerless gloves back. So, I mean, I really, really hope that does happen. But no, you know, he's been an absolute stalwart for Glasgow, and you know he's been around with sort of Glenethley and Northampton, and from the looks of it, no one seems to have really a bad word to say about him. Same with Kelly Brown, to be fair. I don't think I've literally ever heard anyone not say Kelly Brown is a great guy.
Yeah, the reaction to Kelly Brown's retirement on Twitter and stuff like that, it was, I mean, names from all over world rugby like saying absolutely class act, and loads of people really complimenting him on getting over his sort of childhood stutter and the complimenting on him on the speeches that he made when he was Scotland captain after the matches, which were absolutely class. And John Barkley put up a photo today of him, Johnny Beattie, and Kelly Brown just saying R.I.P. the Killer Bees, which I thought was pretty good stuff. Anything else news-wise? There was one thing I just wanted to raise. I don't know if you guys seen it. As we get close, 1 week really until the Lions announcement, and as the more and more stories come out about, you know, who's going to be captain, who's going to be in the squad, I just sense this is a bit of an attitude that because of Scotland's fortunes failing in the last couple of weeks of the Six Nations and in the last 3 weeks of European rugby, that it's better for Scotland to stay completely out of it, or for Scotland players and coaches to not be involved. And I mean, my personal opinion is that it's just completely bonkers. I mean, the Lions is the pinnacle of the European rugby game. And if we as a nation are just deciding that we don't want to be a part of it, be that at coaching level or probably just the fan level, I think the disinterest in the Lions is a really dangerous thing. It can only be good if Stuart Hogg is on that plane to New Zealand and playing against the All Blacks rather than playing against Italy in Singapore in front of absolutely nobody.
Yeah, I get some of the arguments that, you know, if Scotland can have the strongest team possible and go and beat Australia down under, you know, that's huge. But I just think at the same time that if you were to ask any of the sort of prior Scottish Lions that have played and the kind of the guys who are seen as legendary, the likes of Tom Smith and Andy Irvine, they would just talk about it in such a praiseworthy manner. And I think that, you know, the history and legacy of it is important. And I think at the same time, you know, the improvements that players can make, the likes of sort of Richie Gray, for example, going and playing with the likes of Paul O'Connell in the last Lions tour, can only have been as good for his development. So I think it's a bit of a kind of small Scottish mentality that a few people have, which, you know, I think is pretty out of line.
Yeah, look, I mean, if anyone tries to tell me that Stuart Hogg playing against Italy and Singapore is going to be better for his career development than him playing against New Zealand in Auckland, then they're just full of shit. And it's true, like, it's completely ridiculous. It's not like I want Scottish players to play for the Lions out of some sort of selfless act. It's selfish. They're going to be better for it. I'm going to be better being in this sort of environment, playing in the best players in the world and playing what is going to be, especially of all the Lions tours, probably sort of the most pressure from the media, from the fans and everything. And I think we're all pretty massive fans of the Lions and we want to see the Scottish players representing and be out there.
Yeah, I think there's sort of maybe a perceived lack of respect for Scottish rugby amongst the British Isles, and what better way to prove that we are talented and we have sort of good enough players and to go to the Lions and succeed and hopefully get in that test team, which I think should be the attitude of all of those players.
No, I agree. I do think there has been a slight annoyance that some of the Scotland players have had this bad game against England and it appears to have completely written them off. Whereas there has been players from other nations, or the other three nations, who have had mixed bags and are still talked about because of their better games rather than their worst games. And I think that has been something that I have sort of noticed. And look, I hope we get a good bunch there. And I think that also harks back to the point that we chat about with no Scotland coaches being in the room. You know, if people are making these decisions based off the Scotland England game, they might not know why Dunbar had a bad game. You know, it's just. Yeah. There's certain mitigating factors that are going to be sort of left out, but I think it's 6 days till it gets called.
Yeah, it's middle of next week. I can't remember exactly when it is, but yeah, everyone out there should go back and read Mark Palmer's interview with Tom Smith at the weekend. He gives a pretty decent account of what it's like being a Scottish Lion and his thoughts on, you know, why the Scottish coaches should possibly have not turned it down. Gregor Townsend excluded, because I think he was pretty supportive of that decision. But we will come back to do the Lions next week once we know what we're talking about. I'm sure if you're listening to us, you also listen to about three other podcasts who will give you a full Lions. Alan, you've got one more thing to say?
Yeah, and it's just because it's sort of a Scottish institution, sort of Melrose Sevens this weekend. You know, obviously great of Melrose to sort of get into the final sort of home crowd, and sadly I think just sort of second half just didn't have what it takes to sort of take Quinns at the end there. I know the crowd, I think the crowd were almost sort of 99% pro Melrose at the end.
You hope so.
But Sweden beat Heriots, which is always a great thing. Great to see the Swedes come down and take down the Nails.
They have always been my favourite up-and-coming up-and-coming rugby nation. As always, get it up the Nails. But no, I mean, Melrose just seems to go from strength to strength. It just looks like a great, it's a great day out, and people seem to love it. And it's a great mix of, you know, the club rugby guys from Prem 1 and sort of mixing touring sides from the Premiership and all over the world. It's a great, great festival of the game. Right, should we talk about the pro sides? Let's start. Why don't we with Edinburgh versus Connacht, which sounds to me like it was a pretty dreadful match.
Yeah, it wasn't great. It was sort of one of those typical game of two halves, where the first half, just Edinburgh were truly shocking, just so inconsistent. You know, I think pretty much every single player, and actually I include Hamish Watson in that, doing one good thing, swiftly followed by a pretty average to terrible thing. And you know what? Connacht looked like just a really well-organized, if somewhat conservative side, who played it through the forwards, played it nicely, and just took their opportunities. Edinburgh gave away so many penalties, just easy, easy points, to the point where it was, I think, 20-0, 19-20-0 at halftime. I mean, being nilled at home is just, it's just awful. And I just think watching it on TV, you could see the amount of empty seats at Mireside. And I don't blame people for not pitching up, because this season for Edinburgh has been a complete joke.
Yeah, and I think that's just so reflected when you look at the Pro 12 the Pro 12 standings, which I did for the first time in a few weeks, and Edinburgh won, I think, on 23 points, and then you've got the Dragons, Treviso, and Zebra. And I think Treviso, or no, the Dragons are on 20. It's getting hella close, and you just don't want to be associated with those guys. You consider them as the real dregs of the league.
God, you're also negative.
Been hanging out with you for too long, mate.
That is fair. Oh, yeah, no. Edinburgh all right in the second half. They came back pretty well.
They were all right at best. Connacht didn't do anything, and they still made so many mistakes. And I think we've bagged Edinburgh a lot, and we've bagged Duncan Weir a lot. And he's clearly low on confidence, and he's not playing at his best. But he's missing his kicks at goal, which is what he's pretty much there for, because he's not there to really run a game and put people in holes. And it just seemed like, once again, every single player, they came back, but they could have won it. It was just so many basic mistakes. It didn't seem as if Edinburgh had any structure. It was just painful to watch.
Yeah, I mean, my dad, who sort of stays out, he loves watching rugby but stays out of the analysis side, sent me two messages during the Edinburgh game. One, ghostly Mireside, Cockrell's got a big task on his hands here. And the second one is, the pudding having the worst game I've ever seen him play, he'd be lucky to get a game at Hillhead Jordan Hill. So, you know, the fans aren't happy.
Hillhead have a couple of good players back in the day, they're all right. Maybe the pudding should be sent out with the sevens. That seems to be sort of like as of general SRU policy these days. So sort of any Edinburgh players that need a bit of confidence, just get them out to Hong Kong for the weekend. Luke, we can sort of bang on about Edinburgh for probably an hour and a half, maybe.
Yeah, probably. So why don't we go and talk about another poor result? Let's talk about Glasgow losing to Munster. 10-9, again, kind of similar. They went 10-0 down and then had it all to do. And it was a bit of a shame because it wasn't Munster's strongest team, was it?
Yeah, I'm going to have to correct you there. It was 10-7, mate.
Well, we can look forward to more mistakes from me in the quiz later as well.
I think that Munster are resting quite a few of their players because they pretty much guaranteed themselves a playoff spot. So Stander wasn't playing, Zebra wasn't playing. I don't think Conor Murray was playing. But you know, I kind of get it. Like, Glasgow realistically weren't going to qualify for the playoffs. So I think it's quite hard to motivate yourself going to. I think they played at Cork in the end. It just seemed that it was sort of maybe symptomatic of Glasgow's season that they couldn't quite cope with the physicality in a big match, and they couldn't cope with a rush defense, which I think they've really struggled against this season. And there seems, as we talked about the Saracens game, no real plan B when sort of that wide game plan doesn't work. So, you know, I think overall it's still been a good season for Glasgow. So I think they're going to learn a lot, but it is time to to rebuild for next year, I suppose.
Yeah, there's been a lot of negativity on this pod already. Sort of Lions, Edinburgh and Glasgow. Everyone's sort of come out like real cranky today. I don't really know what's going on. I feel like, yeah, I feel like I'm rubbing off too much. But no, I think on Glasgow, you're right. I think it's time to sort of look forward to next season. It's quite hard, I guess, with Dave Rennie sort of probably going to be locked up till sort of July now, because the Chiefs look pretty sweet. They scored one of the two best tries in the Super Rugby this week, and they're probably two of the best tries I think I've ever seen, if you get a chance to check it out. But no, I think we've talked about it quite a few times, and I think there is something around the power in the pack that Glasgow sort of need to address over the summer. And I think it's something maybe sort of look at in a later pod, but we do seem to struggle with that rush defence. When Russell's got the time, or when the Glasgow backlines are in general have the time, they can do some sort of magical things. But when they sort of feel the pressure, really sort of little mistakes seem to really sort of creep into the game. But yeah, I think Zebra at home, Sean Lamont back on the field, bleached hair hopefully, it should be all right.
I really hope he goes for the bleach hair and the orange gloves. Yeah. Surely he will. Glasgow were doing quite a lot on their social media today, and they put up some vintage Sean Lamont photos from that great France game back in the day, and he looks absolutely glorious back in his prime. So enjoy your retirement, Shawnee. But as we said at the top, we had an amazing chat earlier with Joe Ansbrough, who had a great career, London Irish, Northampton, and unfortunately shortened Scotland career. But enjoy the insight. He absolutely loves Scottish rugby and chatting to us. So enjoy it, guys. Hi, guys. We're lucky enough to be joined on the line by Joe Ansbrough. Joe, how are you doing, mate?
I'm good, thank you very much.
What have you been up to today?
It's miserable weather. I'm in southwest Scotland at the moment. Four seasons in a day, just on the beach with my 8-month-old son and wife and family. So it's been quite chilled out. I'm on school holidays. Didn't get a lot of holidays when I played, so you know, making the most of the transition, to be honest. How are you, chaps?
Yeah, good. Kicking on. Looking forward to the Easter break. It's going to be good.
No, great. I've got going for a nice little hill walk on Friday. Should be delightful.
That will be good.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah. So in that spare time you've got, did you get a chance to watch all the Six Nations and then just sort of keep up with Edinburgh and Glasgow?
When school's on, and sadly I coach as well, so Saturdays tend to be, I managed to coax my team into watching the Scotland Ireland game as a rugby session.
Nice.
It was very educational and thoroughly enjoyable, slightly stressful in that second half, but to be honest, not seen much of the Rabo, but watched all the Six Nations games and bar obviously the England game, thoroughly enjoyed it, and it seems like things are on the up for Scotland, certainly, which is great to watch.
Yeah, well, you know what, it'd be great to hear a bit about sort of your Scotland career and kind of how you got there. I know you didn't really take sort of the normal route through kind of the SAU system. I know you were at sort of Cambridge University initially, so yeah, it'd be good to just sort of talk us through how you went from Cambridge through to the Scotland team.
Yeah, sure. So I think probably start from the top, really. I mean, so I was at Cambridge. By the time I got there, I didn't really think I was going to be a professional rugby player, that's for sure. You know, my first 21 years, I grew up in Scotland, played club rugby at Stewartry Sharks and Castle Douglas, but all my school rugby was in Lancashire, a school called Stenhouse College, and I went through the England school setup. That was a great, it still is a great developmental pathway. But to be honest, it wasn't, I went to university to do natural sciences, quite an academic degree. I thought, this is it. I'm going to be working in an office or a lab somewhere. I had a bit of exposure to adult rugby before. I'd played the Langham Sevens, a bit of rugby at Dumfries and Island rugby clubs in the summer holidays. But I didn't have much, my expectations were quite low, to be honest, when I went to Cambridge. I didn't get a chance to train with the main team, the Blues. They didn't they weren't really too interested in me, and I just scraped into the under 21 side because there'd been a few injuries. And fortunately for me, that all changed in my second year at Cambridge really quickly. I don't think I'd even been to the gym, to be honest. I was still quite lightweight, and we played Samoa before they played the Autumn Internationals, and I'd been called into the main team. And it was a baptism of fire, obviously. You know, I was probably like 20, maybe 19.
Oh my God. That sounds
absolutely awful.
Yeah, no, well, to be honest, you know, obviously a lot of agents at the game. Ultimately, that's where I got my contract from that game, or 25 minutes of that game is where I got my contract. I was knocked out after 25 minutes.
I must have been some 25 minutes there.
Sorry?
That must have been some 25 minutes there.
Yeah, well, it was good fun. I was, you know, I had nothing to lose apart from my consciousness, obviously. I hit a hard line, made a good break, probably thought I was going to score, and then woke up in, you know, with doctors looking at me, checking if I remembered anything that had gone on. And I ended up getting an offer. It was Budge Pountney was the director of rugby at Northampton at the time. They offered me a contract in my second year at Cambridge. I went on to go and play. I recovered in time, had my 3 weeks post-concussion protocol pass, managed to get a blue. And I had signed at Saints, you know, the blink of an eye, really. I was keen, you know, obviously I'd watched Budge play a lot, and Tommy Smith was still there, Sean Lamont, and quite a few other Scots joined while I was there. At the time, they were struggling a little bit, Northampton, and I had first and foremost looked at getting up to Glasgow once I realised that professional rugby was actually a valid option for me. And I'd seen a few guys I played with at school go through and play international rugby really young, and I remember Matt Tate's debut. Wasn't a great game for him, but
yeah.
He was 18 years old, and I played with him, and I was like, it's achievable. At my age, in my time, you know, not many people went on to be professional rugby players. It wasn't really seen as a career that was hugely accessible, and I think that's changed now. If you look at the under 20s and how many of those boys go on to be fully capped, I think that pathway is a lot stronger now. But yeah, I mean, I looked up at Glasgow, and I remember meeting Sean Lanin at the time. I was about 20, 21, played table tennis with him. He wasn't particularly fussed, to be honest. He wasn't too fussed. I was quite keen to move back home, and it was disappointing. But then, to be honest, by the time I started at Saints, it was Jim Mallander, Dorian West, Paul Grayson. It was a good setup. We're in the championship. I was given opportunities to play. It was quite a gentle transition into adult professional rugby for me. That said, you know, they weren't too keen on me playing for Scotland. How well you know the system with English qualified players in the Premiership, and there's quite a big push at that. And obviously, if I represented Scotland, there wouldn't be English qualified, which would affect the books to some extent. So it took about 2 years before I took matters into my own hands, and then toured with Scotland Day. So that was 2009.
In those two years, were the SIU sort of tapping you up to say, come on, come along, we'd like to get you involved?
Absolutely. I had contact when I was at Stewartree with Glasgow District, playing up in Ayrshire. And then John Jeffries, Scotland 20s. It was 21 at the time, before the 20s took over. And you know, that was something that we'd considered. It was all a little bit tricky because obviously I was contracted to Northampton at the time, and you can't just go off. And I think the tour was in South Africa. I wasn't allowed to go. It wasn't appropriate for me to go. My contract paid by Saints, so I kind of just kept my head down and tried to make it into the first team. To be honest, I didn't want to rock the boat too much. But obviously, talking to Tommy and Sean, you know, they knew I was keen. But there was a lot of headwind, let's put it that way. And to be honest, once I actually finally was capped for Scotland Day, I didn't hear from Scotland for a year after that. It was probably my fault, to be honest. I was a little bit soft. I think I spent the entire time in Romania injured, enjoying some scenes, not really giving a good account of myself on the field. And I got a bit of a stick from my coaches at Northampton after that. But it all worked out in the end. So yeah, it was yeah. a Yeah, it was a nice transition. It was a bit of a shock to the system going from a student accommodation, and then within a year I was living with Steve Marlowe and Chris Ashton in the same flat in Northampton. All of us very, very very new to professional rugby union, and to be honest, we all had a great time at Saints. It was a fantastic club, and you know, I spent about 5 years there. It was brilliant.
How was living with Chris Ashton?
It was entertaining. There was I can't say too much, but there was one particular moment that was kind of brought back to me quite recently. I was at Stephen Marlowe's testimonial dinner last week, and I remember being in London visiting my then girlfriend, now my wife, and got a phone call at 5 p.m. on a Sunday. It was Chris, and I picked it up, and he's really worried. He's like, you know, Joe, we've been broken into. Someone's burgled our house. And I was like, oh no, it's a disaster. Right, Carly, I've got to go. You know, apparently we've been robbed. First train back to Northampton. You know, obviously quite agitated, stressed out. Get in there. House is fine. Well, it's not the tidiest house, but there's nothing wrong. And it turns out he was just a bit bored. I was particularly pleased when I found out.
Yeah, man.
Although I should have been, obviously, but I found it quite funny. A few days afterwards, but I wasn't best pleased at the time, shall we say? It was entertaining. That's probably the best way to describe it.
Did you spend any time with Carla Spencer as well then?
Yeah, no. Carlos was the fly half when I joined, which was incredible. You know, like I said, Tommy Smith, Sean, these guys were all watched. Carlos Spencer, Bruce Rehana, I'd seen play a lot as well.
Yeah.
All these guys were involved when I joined Saints. And some guys obviously cracked on and ended up being big names. Tonga Weir did well. He was quite quiet at the time, and then he ended up being a huge player in the Premiership, and obviously Courtney Laws and those chaps. But it was... You definitely had to adapt how you played when someone like Carlos is at 10. You know, normally when you're playing 13, you're quicker than the fly half. You've got to hold your run a little bit. You don't want to overrun it. With Carlos, you'd start running before he got the ball, to be honest. You'd take it so far. It took a while for me to climb. I can't say I ever really. I was quite inexperienced, obviously, straight out of uni. And I played quite a few games alongside him, but I don't think I ever made the most of the opportunity, to be honest, sadly. But yeah, he was obviously a serious player, and it was an honour to play alongside him.
Yeah, definitely sounds that way. And then, so sort of going back to the Scotland career, when was your first cap, and who was it that capped you coaching wise?
So my first, 2009, I take the plunge and play Scotland A. So I got capped against Uruguay for the A team. And then it was 2010 when I got my first cap. So a full year later of just radio silence. And I think it was after a few, you know, a couple of good Heineken Cup games for the Saints. And Andy Robinson phoned me up. Initially, I was in contact with Frank Haddon. He was the guy in charge when I was sending out the feelers. And then Robbo kind of called me into the camp before the Autumn Internationals 2010. And I was very much under the impression that it would be a bit of experience just to get a feel of the international environment, meet up with a few of the players. And I was there for 3 weeks, and I watched the New Zealand game. I think we shipped about 50 points. So I was at Murrayfield watching that game.
That sounds about right.
And I was going to play for Scotland A the next week against the USA. So I was driving down to Netherdale and... met up with the A team. I was going to be playing on the wing, I remember, but Max Evans had a bit of a hamstring niggle at 13, so I'd been covering for him in the week, and they said, yeah, Max is fine, you go play against USA. And there I was driving down, within 5 minutes of getting there, got the call, you're starting against South Africa at 13. And I was like, oh, okay.
And, oh, yeah.
it was, you know, the boys wished me luck, obviously, after what happened the week before. They were, you know, really wishing me luck, so to speak. And I was just absolutely ecstatic, to be honest. I didn't think it was going to happen. I had trained that position, but 13 was certainly my preferred position. I was quite pleased to be playing that on my back. And South Africa, I played against a few of those boys De Villiers was the
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
12, and I knew him quite well with the Heineken Cup games, and Robbo was great. He just said, you know, just do what you do well. That's why we've picked you. I didn't have to overcomplicate it. There was no pressure on me. It was very emotional, but it was a good mix. No pressure, but, you know, I was very much pumped for the game. You know, it meant a lot to me. Murrayfield was where I watched all my rugby as a kid. You know, and there I was on the pitch, representing my home nation, all my family watching. In my opinion, just there and then, it wasn't going to get any better. And, you know, it did somehow. We actually beat them, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So it was certainly, you know, I was happy to be there. I knew I was going to give everything. I wasn't going to miss tackles, and I was going to run hard and try and link up with and just add as much value to the team as I could. But, you know, I was just happy. I was just really pleased to be on the pitch, to be honest, and sing the anthem. And then to win the game at the end was phenomenal. It was a great start to a relatively short career, but you know, that was certainly my top memory for Scotland by a long shot. And it was a fantastic evening as well. Swimming at 7 a.m. wasn't that great the next day. But, you got to recover, and like all things in professional rugby, you know, what a win. But then Samoa and Aberdeen the next week, you've got to, you know, refocus.
It's all well and good. Yeah.
Beating the current world.
So was that a big night in a big night in Opal Lounge, was it?
Oh, of course, yeah.
the world famous.
Amicus Athol was going strong at the time, and Chris Cusseter was kind of involved in that. Mm. So we all went to Amicus Athol. It was great. I mean, all, you know, I think my brother was on a stag do, so he'd been at the game. He lives up in Inverness, and he was down. I didn't actually see him, but he was at the game and having a great time, and all my family were there, my wife's family were there, and friends, and it was phenomenal. And you obviously had to wear my first cap, and every player buys you a drink, and you do a drink with every player. And Sean, I'm pretty sure he got me 3 drinks, which wasn't a great start to my evening. And
yeah,
you do all the songs on the bus, and it was phenomenal. Yeah, it was a really, really good experience. But it was always going to be difficult to top, but you know, we came close a few times, to be honest. It was good fun.
Yeah, how was the 2011 World Cup? Because you travelled down to New Zealand, didn't you?
Yeah, well, we went to Australia first, which was glorious weather, and then we went to New Zealand, and it dawned on me, it made a lot of sense why so many New Zealanders come to Scotland and why so many Scots come to New Zealand. It just rained at us for 3 straight weeks. I mean, oh, it was miserable, the weather that was. Obviously, beautiful country, beautiful people. We were in Invercargill for 2 weeks, which was great. You know, quite a congested schedule at the start with Romania and Georgia, and which resulted
in... We absolutely squeaked past both of them, I seem to remember. We managed to just squeak past both of them, if I remember.
Yeah, well, if I'm brutally honest, you know, on the pitch, I didn't enjoy the World Cup at all, to be honest. There, when you tour with Scotland, you're always going to have a good time because the management team, the players, they're brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, really very humble group, but just nice guys. And so it's always fun, but obviously not getting out of the groups.
Yeah,
was mildly traumatic. Well, it was quite very traumatic, to be honest. And there's a lot of things that, you know, we didn't get our preparation right. And I played in that game in Auckland when we lost to England, and you know, we massively underachieved as a squad, which is really frustrating. And, you know, obviously, I said at the end, my parents had come out to watch, and I was like, you know, I'll stick around for a couple of days and, you know, just have a look around New Zealand. And after a day, I was like, let's get me on a flight back. To be honest, it just was raining, and obviously, it was miserable. It was really tough. And obviously, you know, we had so much support out there. It was unbelievable, the amount of support we had. I mean, I still remember walking past. We're walking down the docks in Auckland, and there was just bagpipers outside England's restaurant, just playing, just loving life. And everyone was just like, "Come on!" Yeah, everyone was just backing us to win that game, and it was just so. It was upsetting to not do the business, to be honest, and not get through, or even just beat. Just to, you know, we could have won that game. It will always kind of be one of the games that I least enjoy looking back on. But obviously, you know, it's a privilege to be on the field and to partake in such a big game, but you really want to win those games, and we didn't manage it, sadly.
Talking about a slightly better time in the rain, how about the Scotland-Australia game when you clashed heads with old Strokosh?
we were always going to ask you about that.
Of course. Well, you know, I teach now, I say it comes up quite a lot in lessons.
Oh, really?
I've got to watch my back sometimes. I think it's been doing the rounds. But it was, you know, that was a real, again, that was a very frustrating time in my career in the lead up to that game. I'd moved to London Irish, which was a great move for me in terms of how I wanted to develop as a player, in terms of decision making. Mike Catt, obviously fantastic coach, and I was working under him and a good centre. I'd played about 10 games, I think. You know, I'd slipped two discs, so I missed the 2011 Six Nations. I was trained all week to play against England. Probably the most frustrating Scotland game I ever watched was, I think it was Dave Denton's debut, and Scotland were just all over England. It was Stuart Lancaster's first game, and we still lost somehow.
The charge down.
I think we just dropped. Yeah, it was Charlie Hutchinson got a charge.
He got a charge down in the last 10 minutes.
Opportunities. I'd trained all week for that game, and I was in, you know, and then I just, my back went again, and I was another 4 or 5 months out. So I'd watched, I think we got the wooden spoon, I'd watched it all, didn't get to play a lot for my new club. It was off the back of the 2011 World Cup as well. So, you know, I'd like to forgive myself for getting overexcited when we did beat Australia. I'm not normally known to celebrate, but it was everything, you know. I'd worked closely with the squad, and we were looking at, you know, that was my remit was defence, and how, you know, how we shut down Australia. We worked closely with Duncan Hodge at the time, and you know, we need to stop these guys attacking, you know, Genya, Ione, some great players, Pocock, all those guys. And, you know, it wasn't a classic game. The conditions didn't favour any team, to be honest. But to actually grind out that win, after the season Scotland had, and I've watched it, and it's not fun losing all your games in Six Nations. I wasn't part of that squad, but you're letting down your teammates, you're letting down yourself, you're letting down your family, but you're letting down, you know, a nation, obviously, and it does weigh on you a lot. And for the boys to go out there and turn it around and win that game, yeah, I did get a little bit overexcited, I admit. And 48 stitches later.
48.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it was bad. There was three layers of stitching, so it was all the way to the bone, skull. There were cosmetic surgeons at the game, and they worked on me for an hour and a half,
putting
it back together. We were staying in Manly. I was getting quite good at surfing. I wasn't allowed to go in the water. Wasn't really allowed to go in the sun.
That was annoying.
But 2 weeks. But then 2 weeks later, I meet my old friends again, Samoa. It's the third time I played against them in my career. And so I managed to get back in time just about for that. I missed the Fiji game, but 2 weeks later, all the strapping in the world opened up again within 5 minutes. but obviously got to play the full game, which was fun.
Yeah.
And that was the last time I played for Scotland.
Was that your last cap there?
Yeah, that was the last time. It was victory in Apia against Samoa. Which was, I think I played. I was 13, but it was a good. It was
short, really short, short but sweet. But
sorry,
short but sweet. But the guys you were sort of in that squad with have now gone on to be. I mean, guys like Greg Laidlaw, Richie Gray, Stuart Hogg in particular have really gone on to become sort of stalwarts in this emerging Scotland side now. I mean, like, what were they like to sort of play with at that time? And did you sort of think that those guys were going to go on and be sort of big parts of the future of Scotland rugby?
Well, I think with Richie in particular, you know, he was very young when he started, and he had a phenomenal first. We started in the same Six Nations, and he was phenomenal. I still remember the France game, Stade de France, and he was just unstoppable. And I think it's perhaps been, you know, with injuries, continuity, changing clubs, and then he went to Sale, then he went off to France. It's been maybe tricky to maintain momentum. And that's one thing that's great at Glasgow at the moment. They're playing well. The boys are playing with each other. And you see with, obviously, Hoggy, and, you know, he's just getting better and better. You know, him and Russell seem to have a really good understanding, and they've got a lot of X factor, which, you know, really builds belief in that squad. And Greg Laidlaw was always a fantastic decision maker. He missed out on the 2011 World Cup, but he was running the sessions that whole summer. You know, he was Mike Blair and Chris Custer obviously, you know, struggled a bit with injuries at that time in their career, and Greg was always involved, 9 or 10.
Yeah,
was very unfortunate to miss out, and he was always going to come through after that experience and be a dominant force in Scottish rugby, I think. But yeah, I'm still, you know, when I watch Scotland play now, you know, it's the best side I've seen play since 1999, when, you know, we probably should have grand slammed it if we kicked our goals.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, still won the Five Nations. The attacking options are fantastic. And it is that X factor. And Hoggy and Finn Russell, obviously, are running the show there. But it does help when Glasgow can go down to Welford Road and dominate. And I know the SIU are working hard to get Edinburgh up to speed. And that's only going to build momentum. And then, you know, you can't forget the boys playing in the Premiership and in France. So there is more depth. And I think Richie and Greg are obviously, and Hoggy are huge leaders. And that when they play well, Scotland play well, without a shadow of a doubt. And that's what happened. Obviously, we lost Greg from sheer injury, but that's what happened in the Six Nations. Those key players just made a huge difference, and it galvanises the boys.
No, definitely. It'll be interesting to see how many of them go on the Lions. I think it's a week until they're announcing it, so hopefully we can get.
Yeah, don't ask me, to be honest. I obviously.
No.
It's difficult. It's a common question, but I think that there's a lot of those boys. Yeah, you could think of 10 players in that Scotland squad who, you know, with various combinations, could make it. I don't know if there'll be that many overall, but there's certainly depends what Gatland's looking for, obviously, with his combinations in the midfield, in the back row, in the second row, but there's certainly 10 or so players who are worth a shot, and I don't know how it'll play out, but you know, that's phenomenal that they've put themselves in that position to be selectable, and they'll do, if they do get this shot, they'll do a good job, and some of them could hopefully make the test team as well.
Yeah, definitely. So you're telling us you don't keep up with the rumour mill with any of your old mates about who might be getting in or out?
Well, you know, ultimately, you know, everyone has their own Lions team, don't they?
Yeah.
Working at a school, I hear enough about it. What I can say is a lot of them are making the fantasy rugby teams, which bodes well. You know, in terms of the general public,
definitely,
they're very well rated. These, you know, the attacking options in Scotland are, you know, they're envied, to be honest, just how clinical they are. I mean, we didn't get, I think in that Ireland game, we got onto the Irish 22 four times, three tries.
Yeah.
The first. I'm one near try. You know, when they get in, when the management, the game management's good, and Scotland get into the right areas, we just look lethal, which I've not seen for a really long time. Yeah. So it's very exciting.
Which is the big change, actually scoring tries, because we seem to go through a decade of at least of just relying on Chris Patterson's right boot, which was great, but you know, you've got to score tries to win games.
Yeah, absolutely. And you need good decision makers to get you in the positions where you can score tries, but you also need a set piece that is going to function under pressure. And
yeah, definitely.
You know, I've been watching some of my old games, trying to get them off the telly, unrecorded. You lament, you think, oh, you know, we had a line out there and we didn't win it, or you know, knock on, you know, pick and go, and we've knocked on the try, and it's just that composure under pressure to execute. Easier said than done in an international arena because there's so much pressure, but there's something about this group of players that they seem to be able to deliver that consistently now. It's just about getting them into that position. You know, that game management is going to be a big thing in the future. You see that with obviously Johnny Sexton now, Ireland. He seems to be very good at getting Ireland in the right places to strike. But it is exciting. You know, obviously, I still wake up in cold sweats when I think about the England game. But you know, that's game management and defence. You know, they're things that you can work on relatively. You know, it's not rocket science. It's just application and hard work and that kind of cohesiveness that comes with playing rugby together day in, day out, which a lot of these boys in Glasgow and Edinburgh are doing. And then you add a bit of, you know, sprinkle a bit of stardust with the boys playing Premiership, you know, or in France, obviously Greg and Richie were phenomenal this Six Nations for us. And you think about the guys who aren't playing, and there's some really good players who aren't making that squad, which means that the depth is
getting there, isn't it? Yeah.
No, did you work with Gregor Townsend at all? Was he Bax's coach?
Yeah, he was. Obviously, it's no surprise how well he's done since he took the Glasgow job, and obviously he's going into the main seat this summer. He was brilliant coach to work with. He's predominantly skills and Bax's coach when I worked with him, and just. Obviously, first and foremost, a very good bloke, which you need in that coaching role, and just his very relaxed attitude. You know, he coached in many ways as he played. He didn't put pressure on you if you made mistakes. It was all about that decision-making process and that, you know, just being in a position where you could learn and could improve. And also, he'd stay out for, you know, for a long time doing extras with you as well. You could just say, you know, can I do a bit of this? Can I do a bit of that? And he'd stay there and, you know, a couple other players, and you'd just do extras. And he clearly enjoyed doing that, and, you know, fantastic work ethic. And, you know, I've obviously not worked under him as a head coach, but it's, by all counts, he's just got better and better.
Yeah. So what are you up to now post rugby?
Yeah, bits and bobs initially, to be honest. So I retired. It took me about 12 months. So obviously I broke my neck in a tackle in Cork. It took me about 12 months to kind of physically recover and to kind of close to a level where I was before I got injured.
Yeah.
Probably more like university level conditioning, but you know, kind of normal, shall we say. But yeah, obviously psychologically it takes a lot longer. I'm still getting there, but I don't think I'll be hitting many rucks anytime soon. But but yeah, so my first job offer after that was within rugby. I didn't really consider it at the time. It was probably a little bit too fresh for me, but you know, I had a huge amount of support from London Irish, the SRU, the RPA, the Players Association in the Premiership, and obviously just a general rugby community. And that certainly helped looking into the future and you know, deciding what I wanted to do myself. And I got my first non-rugby contract was in investment banking, but I didn't sign it. I decided to become a biology teacher instead.
Lucrative world of
teaching was the route I took. I had a great school, to be honest, and I very much enjoy it. So I'm teaching at Harrow School, which obviously academically very strong, but also I was surprised by the calibre of its rugby programme, to be honest. There's two prominent Alderovians in the current England squad, and coming through, I've been coaching the first for 2 years now, first 15, and we've had 7 professional contracts.
Wow.
Jesus. 2 years. I've been really surprised by how good some of these boys are. And yeah, it's a really good setup there. It certainly eased my transition from professional sport, being involved with athletes of that calibre. At the same time, getting to use my brain again, kind of recover some of the brain cells I lost playing the game.
So, so can we see you climbing that coaching ladder, or are you going to stay on the academic side?
It's a difficult one, to be honest. it's, you know, rugby's changes so quickly, professional rugby. It's like you say, you know, I played with a lot of these boys. We're talking about, you know, Stuart Hogg and Richie Gray and Greg Laidlaw, and because I'm not in that environment at the moment, I couldn't honestly tell you how different it is. It might be quite similar. I severely doubt it. It certainly seems to be the intensity's picked up a lot since I played. There is more pressure, obviously. There's a greater following as well. It's all moving in the right direction. But I certainly enjoy the balance of teaching and coaching at the moment. And you know, I think it's quite a healthy setup for me, and I'll certainly be doing it for a few more years.
Sounds great. We'll see how many more English internationals you can spit out the other side of your first 15.
Yeah, well, or see if you can.
Scotland under-18s boy, to be honest. Well, he didn't quite make the Scotland under-18s. He's now gone to England-18s. It's bad news for the Scotland.
That's a real shame.
He was let go by Scotland.
This is what we need. We need you to keep an eye on people with Scottish grandmothers and things like that who are at Harrow as well.
Well, his brother was Scotland 20s. He was up there and he was number 8, good player, and sadly, you know, they weren't overly interested up north, and he's now playing England 18s. Signed at Saracens as well. But
for Christ's sake! So now he's going to be in
those boys. Obviously, Zach Mercer, another example of
a
Mercer, so wasn't he? And he's now down captain England 20s. But there's a lot of good Scottish players down in the English school system who are, as far as I know, very much devoted to going back up to play for Scotland, which is good news. The Edinburgh school system, and just as, you know, there's a lot of good schools in Scotland actually playing very well. We were down at Rosslyn Park a few weeks ago, and I know Merkiston had a good run.
Yeah, they always go down there and do quite well. The schools in Edinburgh and Glasgow seem to be getting a lot better as well, which is good to see. But Joe, honestly, thanks so much for your time, and hope everything continues to go well, and you can send a few of your Harrow lads up to play for the Scotland age groups, and then for Edinburgh and Glasgow, and then Scotland in years to come.
Yeah, I'll be looking out for them. Don't worry.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, cheers, Joe. All the best. Have a good one.
Cheers, guys. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Wow, that was absolutely brilliant. What did you make of that, Alan?
Yeah, just really, really interesting guy. You know, great to hear sort of just about how he sort of came through, sort of Northampton Saints. I don't really know how much that sort of happened now these days, even now with sort of Cambridge Uni playing Samoa and then getting signed up to play the Saints. I just don't think it's something that would happen even sort of 7-8 years on. But yeah, clearly loves rugby, loves Scottish rugby. So no, great to speak to him.
Yeah, it was a real shame that his career got cut short as it is, but it sounds like he is making sure that the next generation are coming through, and hopefully he can find some of those English lads that fancy a game for Scotland. But we won't keep you for much longer, guys, but Matt has promised us his best ever quiz, so we'll pass over to that. Matt, why don't you take it away?
Yeah, I mean, big claim there, but once again, when I was supposed to be working, I've come up with what I think is a pretty good quiz, so hopefully listeners will enjoy it, and you too will enjoy it, and hopefully know a few questions. So the first one I'm going to do, I don't know if you guys have seen it before, but I think the All Blacks every year have a kind of a social where they all turn up in their original club strip. So with that as a sort of theme, I was wondering if you could name these current and past Scottish players and their original clubs. I can see your faces thinking you're not that confident, but I think you will get most of them at least, or I hope so. So the first one I'm going to go for is Ross Ford, his original club. You got it, big man.
Yeah, I've got this. You stay away, mate.
Oh, that's great radio. Ross Ford number one. Tom Brown is number two. That's a bit of a gimme. Pete Horn is your number three. Yeah. Your man Gordon Reid, number four, and Scottish legend Chris Patterson as number five. So tell me the answers at the end. Moving on, got answers to all those? Moving on, we're going to move to a shirt sponsors / kit manufacturer question. So, here we go. Can you, working backwards, can you name, including the current kit, the last three kit makers that have made the Scotland strip? I think the first two are okay. It's the third one that's, you're getting into vintage Scotland shirt territory. I'll give you a little clue with that.
I mean, we had Canterbury for a really long time. I'm just trying to remember who was before that.
Well, you've probably just given Alan an answer there. So well done, mate.
I'd be surprised if Alan didn't have Canterbury there.
I look in his face, he didn't have it. So, right, do we have answers for that? You got an attempt at least?
Yeah.
And then working backwards, I want you to give me the last three shirt sponsors.
I've got the last two.
Okay.
But yeah, bloody third one.
The third one's tough. The third one's tough. I'm not even sure if it is still an ongoing company, but...
Oh, really? It's not the bird, is it?
That was the fourth one. So it's not Famous Grouse, I can tell you that.
Oh,
yeah, sorry.
I had that as the second one, so this, I mean, that's good because it gives me a chance to redo... Oh, no, I know what the second one was.
Okay, well, we'll see that. Then a bit of an odd one, but we're giving you some options. This is, once again, I've taken this all from Wikipedia, so once again, this is according to Wikipedia. What is the official kit font of the current Scotland kit? So, here we go. Oh, look at these. These are great. So, we either have A, Arial Rounded MT Bold. B, Baskerville Old Face. Or C, Engravers MT. So, I mean, you've got... You know, a 33% chance there.
I mean, you're not doing much for our listenership there. I mean, fonts, are you mad?
I think it's quite interesting, personally, but maybe that just reflects the kind of guy I am. Okay, so I presume that you've got a guess for that. And then final question, these are all over the place, I suppose, but which club has produced the most Scottish internationals in history? And if you're right... Then you get a bonus point if you can name any of those internationals. I think it's quite a tough one, but it's a good one, I think. So see how you do there. Doing okay with that? Yeah. Got a guess? There's been quite a lot of guesses in this one. So running through the answers. So the club, the original clubs. What do we get here? What do we get for Ross Ford?
I did not have an answer.
Kelso?
Kelso is correct, sir. Well done, Ross Ford. I think his brother still plays there, actually. And Tom Brown, I presume we all got that?
Wait, is it like school or club? Oh, right, because they're different, I think. Yeah, Edinburgh Accies.
Yeah, Edinburgh Accies.
Yeah, I think he did play at Curry, but I think he would have played at Edinburgh Accies before that. So, Pete Horn, what do we get for that?
You
go. How Fife?
How Fife.
High five is correct. So that's 2-1? 3-2, sorry. Gordon Reid, what do we get for that? Anyone confident?
Got to be an Air man.
I went for Air as well.
You definitely didn't. I can see you not writing that. Air is correct, though. And Chris Patterson, what do we have for that?
Gala.
Gala, well done. So that's 5-4. That's pretty strong in the end. Okay, so... Let's go through the last three kit manufacturers working backwards. What do we got for that?
I went Macron, Canterbury, Cotton Traders.
I went for Gilbert.
There's no Gilbert. Dave takes it. That is a... I mean, technically Cotton Oxford, but I'm giving you Cotton Traders. That is an excellent answer.
Are they
the same company? I don't know. And then before that, it was Pringle. That was the fourth one. That was a good kit.
That's the glory days, the Pringle kit.
Well done, mate. So I think you take the lead with that. No. Oh, no, you're joint. And then the last three shirt sponsors, what do we have for that? That's quite a tough one.
Current one's BT, then RBS, then Murray?
That's right. I forgot about RBS. I had BT and then Murray and then Famous Grice.
BT, RBS, then Murray is correct. 6-5. Bloody hell. Well done, lads. I didn't think you'd get many of those. And then what do we got for the official kit font? A, B, or C?
Whatever one Baskerville was, because I like the name.
I will go for C.
You're both wrong. Baskerville Old Face is the font that I use at work. and Arial Rounded MT Bold, according to Wikipedia, is the official font of the Macron kit. So there you go.
You've got to be worried about the lad that goes on Wikipedia to add that fact to the Scotland team. Like, why?
I mean, it definitely wasn't me. So,
I think the lady protests too much on that one. Bloody hell.
Okay, so 6-5 still then to Alan. So here we go. Which club has produced the most Scottish internationals? What do we get for that?
Hoig.
I've gone a bit rogue and gone Edinburgh University.
You're both wrong. The correct answer is London Scottish, with 220 internationals over time. Really? And that includes people who've, you know, the likes of Gavin Hastings and Kenny Logan, who've played for them at some point. Yeah. Once again, it's Wikipedia, so blame the founder. It's definitely London Scottish there. Even if you exclude those guys, they're way above anyone. And I reckon Hoik is close after that, and then maybe someone like Edinburgh Accies. But London Scottish is definitely the most. So Alan takes it.
That is delightful. I thought the uni teams from back in the day would have like had quite a substantial amount of people. You done that? You done much research, mate? Back in the late 19th century, there was quite a lot of uni lads.
You don't know what you're talking about. Wikipedia knows what it's talking about. So I think most of our quizzes have been based on Wikipedia. So we've got to, you know, stick to that.
Yeah, it sounds like. I guess produced is a difficult word there. Like, surely London Scottish isn't producing all of those players. Like, as if Big Gav is not affiliated to Watsonians.
Yeah, but if he's capped first out of that club, which I think is what the definition is, then yeah, I think that's fair enough.
Big Gav was destroyed by Watsons. It needed London. Had to leave to really be, to become who he was. No, that was absolutely delightful. I'm sure one of them was wrong, but good to go. I think we need to wrap this up, mainly because I have to go home. So
I think Alan is correct, as always. Thanks again for joining us. We've got I'm not gonna say it out loud in case it doesn't happen, yeah. But we have got a great guest potentially lined up for next week. So we'll hopefully get that over the line.
Although saying that, anyone who lasted an hour and 20 minutes listening to today's pod is probably going to stay around for next week's pod. Yeah. So we do have a good person coming.
We appreciate our ultras out there. Thanks again, guys. If you are here, please, please leave us a review. Let us know what you think. Get in touch at Thistle Rugby Pod. And hey, if you've made it this far, why not get yourself over to cornerstone.co.uk and get yourself the best razor on the market. Don't just take our word for it. It is GQ approved. And you get, if you use Thistle at checkout, you will get a razor, a premium engraved shaft with your initials. And 6 blades, all for £4, and it's delivered right to your door, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's all good. And as you heard in our interview with, I'm not very good at this advertising luck, am I?
Let's cut the pod. We're done. We're done for today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.